Talking with Captain Gene Cernan, U.S. Naval Aviator. When we left for the break, we had left your career at Pensacola. You're just about to go into flight training. What was your flight training experience like there? How did the Navy prepare you for flight?
I'd never been in an airplane until I was 22 years old. I don't know whether that's good or bad, but as I said, flying financially as a young kid was way out of our reach. Sounds like an F-18 out there. I'm a little envious. But when I finished flight training, I went to San Diego, flew old F-9s, the FJ-4 Bravo, which is the only flying one, has been flown by Rich Sedgwick, who was here in the Legacy flight yesterday. That's a wonderful airplane. Flew that, did some caracals, then transitioned to the A-4, the little Skyhawk. Made two cruises to the Western Pacific, one aboard a couple of the smaller carriers that are no longer in service, a Shangri-La and a Hancock. And I caracaled on a Ranger, which was at that time a super carrier. And a real revelation was in making a cruise on the smaller carriers, because all of a sudden the landing field got very, very small by comparison. But, mate, have you ever not heard that and looked up to see what it was? You provided a perfect background. I'm sure that's an F-18 out there. Made two cruises in Western Pacific in the late 50s, early 60s, before things really heated up in Southeast Asia, and then came back in 1961. About the time Alan Shepard, the first American in space, was to go up. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do with my life. I'd spent 5 years in the Navy. I'd done what I wanted to do. And someone asked me when we watched that Shepard go up back then, how would you like to do that? And I said, you know, I'd love to do it, but by the time I get good enough, by the time I get qualified, there won't be anything left to do. And that's about all I thought about it. And the Navy said, don't get out. We want to send you to postgraduate school for more education up in Monterey, California. And I just got married. And I want to thank you for this background. It's wonderful. And I just got married and went up to Monterey and went up to Monterey, California to get a master's degree in engineering, and thought I could still fly up there, and I just got married, still in the Navy. I didn't know what else I was going to do anyway. That led me to thinking about staying in the Navy for a long period of time. Now, it was while I was there that my life really changed, because this was 2 years after Shepard flew. So in 1963, I got a call from the Navy Department, Special Projects, young lieutenant in the Navy. I hadn't gone yet to test pilot school. I didn't quite have enough jet hours. I did not apply for the space program. And they said, we want to recommend you to NASA for further evaluation. Like a dummy, I said, for what? And they said, well, for the Apollo program. And I said, well, not only yes, but hell yes. And, you know, maybe I'll get a chance to meet an astronaut if I go to Houston. And that's what started the ball rolling.
You met a couple of astronauts when you were there.
Well, yeah, I went down after a series of tests and paperwork and a number of things. And, you know, don't call me, we'll call you. And then I got invited to Houston, Texas. And I went down to the old Rice Hotel and walked into a ballroom. And we all went down there with the same name, some name I don't remember, because no one wanted to know we were there. It was a real secret, you know, selection. 400. Maybe some of your sons or daughters at that, but young men who had broken every speed record, every altitude record, combat experience, the finest test pilots that this country had to offer were in that room. 400 of them and me. And I wondered, what am I doing here? And that's another message I pass on to young people. You just never count yourself out. You never know. Because it was roughly 10 years after Alan Shepard flew, when I was asked the question, how would I like to do that, that I stood right next to that same Alan Shepard the night before he went to the moon on Apollo 14. I stood there as backup commander to Apollo 14, so I had to be his equal. I had to be ready to do the job if he didn't. Of course, in Shepard's case, he was going to fly. He waited too long. But I not only stood there the night before he launched with Alan, I stood there having flown twice, gone to the moon, and walked in space, and Alan still only had 16 minutes of space flight experience up and down. So pass this on to all those youngsters, you and Connor. Don't ever give up. My dad always used to say, just do your best, and you're not going to be better than everyone at everything. But sooner or later, you're going to surprise yourself. And by golly, he was right. He was right.
So I've heard it said that landing on an aircraft carrier is one of the most thrilling and terrifying experiences that an aviator can have. But which was more exciting for you, landing on the carrier or the Saturn V?
Well, you gotta throw something else in it. Landing on an aircraft carrier when you turn out the lights at nighttime. No commander's moon. I flew in a big Saturn V, you know, 350 feet tall, a big Saturn V that we took to the moon. Once on Apollo 10 in daylight. Apollo 17 was the only night, first and ever only night launch with human beings on it. It was the only night launch in Apollo. And I was commander of it, so I had my hands on the throttle on that one. I've made day carrier landings, and I have made night carrier landings. I have made day launches to the moon and night launches to the moon. And I want to tell you, when you're out there at night coming aboard a carrier a million miles from anywhere, and you look over your shoulder, and there ain't anybody behind you except you and your maker, okay? Just you and your maker coming aboard. That's when you find out what kind of guy you really are. There is nothing in my life that I have ever done, launching to the moon, landing on a moon, or whatever, that compares to a night carrier landing somewhere out in the middle of an ocean with an aircraft carrier doing this kind of thing. And you got about 200 feet and three wires to catch you. There's just nothing. And unless you've done it, you haven't done it. And every time you do it, it's the first time.
So there you have it, the definitive answer. The night carrier landing is the ultimate.
Long way to answer the question, but I wanted to make sure you understood why.
I certainly do. You still do some flying yourself these days, correct?
Pardon?
You still do some general aviation flying today?
Yeah, I've got a 421. Mm-hmm. I fly whatever I can fly. I've soloed a balloon. I've soloed a glider. I'm not going to tell you an expert in either one of those, but I've done it. I do a lot of work with Bombardier, so I've been a card-carrying captain at Lear 40, 45, and I've flown everything to some degree, all the way up to the big global express. Flying's, when they take my airplane away from me, I am not going to be a happy camper. I know that's going to happen someday, but it hasn't happened yet. So I'm hanging in there as long as it makes sense to me. I'll hope I know when the time comes when it doesn't make sense. I'm going to keep flying. That's been my life. I said naval aviation has been my life. Aviation has been my life.
Good. You've been to Oshkosh before, several times. Is there when you get here on the grounds, is there a favorite airplane that you always try to seek out?
Oh, I love it. And I still love to see somebody. Everybody's got a new idea how to make another piece of wing fly somewhere. It's great, you know. Anything. Every time I walk through the passageways and halls and whatever, you see something, and you got to stop and look at it. And, you know, I'd like to fly that kind of thing. You know, I wonder if I could fly that kind of thing. And, you know, someone said, what's the most your favorite airplane in the world? Well, I can tell you, I love my old T-28, which is what I learned to fly in out there. That's a great airplane. I love the airplane I made a couple cruises on in the Pacific aboard carriers. But your favorite airplane is always the airplane you're flying at the moment, right?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I love my 421. It's I've had it for 18 years, and I don't deserve it. But my 421 and my, you know, you look in your iPhone and what you got pictures of. Most people got grandkids and wives and all that kind of thing. I got dogs and airplanes. And grandkids and wives.
Okay. All right, we're just about out of time, but any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our audience today, especially maybe some words of inspiration for young people who might be looking toward the stars themselves?
Well, I the message I try and leave with young people, I've given you a couple of them already, but I think simply put is no matter what you do in life, always shoot for the moon, which is another way of saying go out and do your best. But always shoot for the moon, because even if you miss, if you try hard and you shoot for the moon, you're going to land somewhere up there among the stars. I can promise you that. And notwithstanding what's happening to our space program today, we are going to go back to the moon, and we are going to go to Mars, and it's this younger generation that is going to take us there, as long as we give them the same opportunity someone gave us when we were their age.
Captain Cernan, thank you for joining us today on EAA Radio. Enjoy your rest of your stay here at AirVenture. Live from the Welcome Center, this is EAA Radio.